This is Bill Ayers on 95.5 PLJ. We're back with our Community Connection show. And our guest tonight is Andy Breslau. He's a senior VP for a group called the Downtown Alliance. They've been around since 1995, and they work in downtown. They're a business organization, but they do lots of things. And I thought we'd have Andy come on and tell us about it, because it's a big part of New York and a big part of New York's finance, as well as lots of other dimensions. So welcome, Andy.
Thank you so much, Bill. Good to be with you.
All right. So start off by telling us a little bit about what the Downtown Alliance does, and a little bit about the geography. How far north do you guys go?
The best way to think about our geography is everything south of the Brooklyn Bridge in Manhattan.
Okay.
River to river, down to the Battery.
All right. So that's a big chunk of real estate, and a very expensive chunk of real estate, obviously. There's a lot going on down there.
It's the home to everything from Wall Street in the financial district, mm-hmm. to the seaport, Battery Park City. It covers a lot of historic New York. It's where, you know, New York got its beginning, and
mm-hmm, yeah.
we like to think it's where it's beginning again. It's in some ways one of the newest parts of the city too.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the services that you guys provide for downtown.
We're really proud of kind of the breadth of work we do.
Yeah, it's a lot.
The majority of what we do has to do with what we call safe and clean. We mm-hmm. have a sanitation team of 65 workers that work pretty much around the clock, trying to keep the neighborhood clean, beautiful, and keep its public spaces flowering and with public seating. And we also have a group of 60 public safety officers who, in partnership with the First Precinct downtown, patrol the streets mm-hmm. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they're really eyes and ears on the street. And in many ways, they're our greatest and best diplomats, because a lot of what they do is interfacing with people who have questions about directions,
mm-hmm, sure.
or may have lost something, or reuniting lost children with their families.
Mm-hmm.
They provide a vital, invisible public service every day.
Just a question that just occurred to me. Is there any other section of New York that has similar kind of operation that you guys have?
Yeah, there is a collection. We're organized as a business improvement district.
Right.
We're an independent not-for-profit, but who is kind of sanctioned and chartered by the city.
Okay.
And there are scores of them throughout New York,
mm-hmm.
That vary in size from, you know, three or four professional staff and a number of contracted folks who might provide the clean and safe function, to some organizations like the Times Square Alliance, that is about the same size that we are. Being, as you said at the top of the show, being a part of, you know, one of the more literally richer parts of real estate in New York City, since we're funded off of a tiny fraction of the commercial property tax, our budget allows us to do not only the public safety and sanitation work that I outlined a moment ago, but outreach to the homeless, a free public bus that kind of goes on the outside of the district, where public transportation doesn't provide service.
Well, that's kind of unique. You have a bus that goes from river to river, right?
Goes from river to river, kind of a loop mm-hmm. around the entire district. That's absolutely free to anyone who wants to use it, and for people who want to go from the east side of the district and around the outside and go to a shopping center or a food store or mm-hmm. a doctor's appointment on the west side, it is often the most convenient way to go.
So for anybody who's listening to us, if you go downtown and you don't, you take a subway down there probably, but then you have to get around. Well, here's a bus service. So what street does it run on, just to give people a clue?
It runs largely on Water Street on the east side,
okay,
and then around on West Street on the west side.
Right.
And we also have a next bus technology that tells you when the bus is going to show up. If you want to learn more about the bus and anything else we talk about on the program, I recommend folks to our website, which is www.downtownny.com.
Okay, so downtownny.com. You can go there and you can find out all kinds of things about the Downtown Alliance. That's what we're talking about tonight. So I just thought I'd start off with the transportation, because that's a big deal. And most of the people who come into your area are using public transportation, right?
That's one of the wonderful things about Lower Manhattan. It is the place where almost every single subway line originates or has a stop.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's the subway system, our buses, or the new and growing ferry system, are all kind of headquartered in Lower Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
Pier 11 is kind of the Grand Central for the ferry system, and you literally have both Fulton Center, which is an extraordinary confluence of a wide number of subway lines, and also the Oculus, the World Trade Center Transit Center, for the PATH and a number of other subway lines. And these are all cheek by jowl and allow you to get downtown very easily. And then you can take advantage of our free bus.
I've never used your free bus, but I've certainly used pretty much all of the transportation to get down there at one time or another in my life. And it's true. And then when you get there, it's not too far to walk either, because it's a relatively small area. Although, you know, if you're on one end of it, you don't want to necessarily have to walk to the other end. So you take the bus. All right. So we've talked about the free bus. And we've also talked about the fact that you guys do cleanup and you have a public safety operation. What about some of the other services that you're providing for businesses down there and for people in general?
Well, I mean, there's so much. Before I go on beyond the safe and clean dimension of what we do, there's so much to that, because we collected in the last 4 years over 1,000 tons of recyclables.
okay.
That's a third of the neighborhood's street waste that's been diverted from landfills. And, you know, we like to spend our spare time coming up with funny metaphors, but that's equivalent to the weight of 333 elephants.
Okay.
So it gives your listeners a sense of the size and scope of that effort. And we have over 1,300 pieces of street furniture. One thing that I've learned in this job, that if you build seating in New York,
they will come.
Will get used, yes. people like to take advantage of the green space we have and welcome an opportunity to, you know, meet a friend there or have lunch or enjoy looking up at some of the wonderful public spaces and architecture we have downtown.
Now, you said green space. I don't think people think of Lower Manhattan as green space. Where is it?
Well, there's Bowling Green,
sure,
which is a wonderful historic park. But the beauty, one of the great stories of not just Lower Manhattan, but a lot of New York in the last, I'd say, you know, decade, 12 years, has been the rehabilitation and newfound accessibility to our waterfront.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I think makes Lower Manhattan a special place is you don't really get as much of a sense that you're on an island in Manhattan as you do when you are downtown.
Yes, that's true.
And whether it's, you know, you can walk from the seaport all the way around up through Battery Park and then on to Battery Park City. And all along the edge of Lower Manhattan are wonderful parks.
So everybody now knows about what's happening around Midtown on the west side. But I don't think people know that they can actually walk all the way around downtown and see water and greenery and all kinds of architecture. So do you find that there's a lot of people who come downtown just to do that?
Yeah, increasingly, more and more. Mm-hmm. Not only has there been kind of extraordinary growth in tourism, that is a double-edged sword in some respects.
Right.
Largely a good thing for job creation and keeping New Yorkers humming. A place like Governor's Island, for instance, is an incredible treasure.
Oh, absolutely.
And we consider that part of Lower Manhattan and kind of Lower Manhattan's backyard. And it's a short, 8-minute, 10-minute ferry ride from the Battery Maritime Building. And you are, for any of your listeners who haven't yet availed themselves of Governor's Island, I can't recommend it strongly enough. It is an enormous asset to the city and huge amounts of open space. And they do really creative, compelling programming out there, and a really wonderful place to take a family, a range of all ages. You can bike, you can go on pedal cabs, you can get a unique view of the city and of the Statue of Liberty that you don't often have. It's really a fantastic place to spend, particularly now in August and in September. A few places that are better bet for a weekend trip.
Well, I might be doing that this coming weekend. So now if I were going down there, how would I get there from Penn Station? And then where would I get the ferry?
The ferry runs out of the Battery Maritime Building, which is on very close to the point of Manhattan Island, but slightly on the east side. Mm-hmm. The very end of the FDR Drive is another way to find it. And you just take a subway. I believe the closest one would be Bowling Green.
What line?
I know it's the 4, 5, and 6, and mm-hmm. I believe that not the 6 train, the 4 and 5 train. Mm-hmm. And you just walk a very short distance. You can pretty much walk also from, if you want a really pleasant walk, is you can get off either at the Wall Street Station or Fulton Street, where there's the ACE, and you walk about, way less than a half a mile to mm-hmm. the end of the island, and it's there. But if you get off at Bowling Green, you're literally right there, mm-hmm. and you walk to the Battery Maritime Building, and ferries run all morning and into the late afternoon, early evening. And
so what would people find if they went there on a weekend?
You get there and you walk off. And the thing that is just an extraordinary vista, first of all.
Oh, sure.
But it's a, I mean that not only in like it's a great view to look out mm-hmm. on, but it changes your perception of New York Harbor.
That's true.
Of the sense of New York's history as a seafaring place. Mm-hmm. And you can, there are all kinds of open spaces to have a picnic. There are food trucks. There are bike rental places.
Concerts, parties, picnics, right?
Picnics. Sometimes they'll have concerts and... Mm-hmm. The Lower Manhattan Cultural Council has studios for artists there that sometimes they have programming that allows you to visit artists and artist studios. There is a whole field of hammocks, which is a wonderful, very un-New York-like thing.
That's great.
And there's also a whole hill a man-made hill that is full of slides.
Great for kids.
For kids of all ages.
exactly. Exactly.
It's a hoot. You're going down this very steep, long slide, and it's a lot of fun.
Oh, I have to take my granddaughter there, that's for sure. All right, so that's Governor's Island. But let's move around a little bit more downtown. And you have a performing arts center. You've got the South Street Seaport. Tell us a little bit about the performing arts center.
Well, that's very exciting. I mean, it's not going to open for a couple years now.
Oh, okay.
But the Ronald Perelman World Trade Center Performing Arts mm-hmm. Center is out of the ground now. It's always a relief when, you can see plans move from conception to steel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, I think most New Yorkers have a sense of kind of the impact that BAM had on Brooklyn. Or Lincoln Center in the Upper West Side. The Performing Arts Center, Lower Manhattan has been an incredible renaissance story, certainly in the 20-plus years the Alliance has been around. But as everyone knows, whether it was the tragedy of September 11th, mm-hmm. The awful recession of 2008, Superstorm Sandy, it's a neighborhood that has had to prove its resilience. And what's been tremendously exciting over the last decade is the success of that transformation and renaissance. And, we've seen kind of diversity in the economy establish itself, which is really healthy for the neighborhood. We've then seen the coming of kind of retail options for both residents and for visitors, and it becoming a retail destination. And then quickly on the heels of that has come something that's important to everybody, which is food and the breadth of food options and fantastic restaurants, whether it is here's another tip for your listeners. We love all our stakeholders and businesses in Lower Manhattan equally, but there's a sandwich shop called Pasillo's that makes like the best Italian sandwich in Manhattan, certainly, on Fulton Street. And you have like a sandwich shop like that to, every star chef you can think of, whether it's a restaurateur like Danny Meyer, who just opened up Manhattan, or Tom Colicchio's new restaurant at the Beekman Hotel, which is a spectacular piece of architecture, that hotel. The food options have exploded in the last decade. The one piece, going back to the Performing Arts Center, that is the last leg of the chair is culture. And it's a indispensable one. The Lower Manhattan Cultural Council has really held down the fort over the last 20 years, producing kind of critically acclaimed dance and music in the neighborhood. And certainly Brookfield Arts has produced a wonderful series of music on the Hudson. But there hasn't been an institution. There have been dance companies, smaller institutions, but there hasn't been kind of a center of gravity of culture. Our friends at Pace University have a beautiful theater, but we believe that the coming opening of the World Trade Center Performing Arts will really give the streets and the neighborhood a cultural identity and pulse. And a center, that'll be very exciting.
This is Bill Ayers on 95.5 PLJ. We're doing our Community Connection show, as we always do. And our guest tonight is Andy Breslau. He is the Senior Vice President for the Downtown Alliance. And the Downtown Alliance is downtown New York. And their phone number is 212-566-6700, 212-566-6700. And you can find them at downtownalliancenY.com, downtownalliancenY.com. And I suspect if people went there, they would see all kinds of events that you have going on pretty much every week, right?
Yeah, a quick correction. It's downtownny.com. And on our website, we have a community calendar. We have information on sales and specials, programs that we're doing to promote restaurants and culture and stores downtown. So it's a pretty rich web presence, as well as we're quite active on social media. And our Facebook page and Instagram account are great places for people also to keep up with us and to learn about everything that's going on. One thing, Bill, I wanted to mention that I don't think many people still to this day have a full appreciation of, the population at the outset of the program. I said in some respects this oldest part of New York is also one of the newest parts of New York.
Sure.
And 20 years ago, there were less than 14,000 people who lived, you know, who called Lower Manhattan home.
Mm-hmm.
And today that number is north of 60,000.
Wow. I was going to ask you that question. I'm glad you got to it. I know they've built a lot of big buildings and people are in them.
This is really another kind of sometime unintentioned or only half-intentioned acts mm-hmm. produce wonderful consequences. As Lower Manhattan as a business center aged, the Alliance was in its early days wanted made a self-conscious decision to make it a mixed-use community. Mm-hmm. And where were these people going to live? And it occurred to everybody that perhaps repurposing this aging office stock mm-hmm. into residential buildings would be a good strategic play. And what happened was they made beautiful – these old office buildings were repurposed and reimagined as residential buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And not only did they make great homes and great apartments for people, they saved an entire era of New York architecture.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's really, mm-hmm. Two birds with one stone.
Sure.
It provided the impetus and space for housing for people. And it in at the same time, there is a generation of skyscrapers and Art Deco buildings and early modern buildings that have found a second life as residential buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And that adds to our architectural heritage.
Are they pretty much spread throughout, or mostly on the water?
No, they're spread throughout. Actually, most of these buildings I'm talking about right now are in the interior of Lower Manhattan.
Okay.
People don't realize that most of Wall Street, east of Broad Street, is residential now.
I didn't know that.
And Bill, that leads me to kind of another thing that's been a great success, not only for the specific area of Lower Manhattan, but Lower Manhattan's relationship to all of New York,
mm-hmm.
in that the economy has so diversified. 20 years ago, Lower Manhattan was virtually, or 30 years ago, was virtually a corporate monoculture having to do with finance.
Yes.
And
I think most people think of it as that right now.
But it's nothing could be further than the truth.
Ah, so okay, tell us what else is down there.
I can't give a percentage of it, but a significant portion of mm-hmm. the journalistic and content creation world has moved to Lower Manhattan.
Ah.
Whether it's Condé Nast or Refinery 29
mm-hmm.
or the EXO Group, which produces very popular websites having to do with weddings and children, to the Daily News, there are scores of media companies in Lower Manhattan. There are also huge advertising firms, whether it's Droga5, a very large kind of contemporary advertising agency, or a smaller one like the Barker Agency, or coming to the World Trade Center campus is literally one of the two or three largest ad conglomerates in the world called Group M.
Hmm.
And with those companies comes all the downstream production houses and graphic artists.
Right,
and
right.
It really, private sector employment, this kind of puts an exclamation point on it. Private sector employment in Lower Manhattan is at the same level it was right before 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of a rough estimate, 60% of the employment prior to 9/11 was involved one way or another with finance,
mm-hmm.
Insurance, or real estate. Today, that percentage is half that.
Ah, about 30%.
About 30%.
Well, in some ways, that makes it healthier, right? Because it's not dependent upon one sector of business.
You can't emphasize that enough, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
I think diversity in our generators of employment is the gold standard.
Yes.
It's what we as a city, as a state, as a country should be striving for so that we can weather, you know, any storm and any that may affect one sector or another in an outsized way. And that's been very exciting in so many ways because it's, amongst other things, it's driven down the average age of Lower Manhattan. Lower mm-hmm. Manhattan is an extraordinarily young place now.
Because those are young jobs.
Those are young jobs. Mm-hmm. There's a piece of data that kind of blows people's mind that there are more millennials in Lower Manhattan, or just as many millennials in Lower Manhattan as there are in Williamsburg.
I don't think people would realize that.
No. They're drawn by the pleasures of a kind of a work-live environment mm-hmm. where they can walk to their job.
Yeah, but isn't the housing very expensive down there?
It is. It, you know, where in New York isn't it?
Right.
There's no mistaking that it is a, by and large, an affluent community. Mm-hmm. But the one thing you find is that two things. Young people who are working in these industries are making a good living. Two, that at an early stage of their career, you see certain groups of young people, you know, younger adults, drawn to living two or three bedroom apartment.
Absolutely.
In a building
yeah.
that has a doorman mm-hmm. and, you know, combining their incomes together, they can afford a place downtown. And
right.
there are big buildings, big residential buildings downtown that where you see that kind of setup over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that's also heartening is that what you see when these people get to the next stage of their life and start a family, many of them are choosing to stay downtown.
Hmm. I wouldn't have thought that.
Are the
schools okay? I mean,
and that's one of the constant the demand on school for school class size and mm-hmm. increasing classes in buildings is one of the perennial issues in the neighborhood. They've built a number of new schools and a number of really fine schools in Lower Manhattan, but
not enough.
It's never, you know, it's exciting. It's, you know, it's frustrating and a pressing need on one hand. On the other hand, from a 50,000 foot point of view, it's the kind of problem you want to have.
Mm-hmm.
You want, you know, you have an area where people want to live, and you want to work as hard and fast as you can to meet that demand. But there's, you know, it is home. It's an attractive place for families. And you see that in the growth in public schools in the area,
mm-hmm.
and you see private schools locating themselves at every level.
I know, yeah, yeah. Now, let's move from the affluent down to the problem of homelessness and poverty, because you have lots of homeless people down in Lower Manhattan. How do you deal with that?
We work, you know, homelessness is something that shocks the soul and grabs our every level of our attention as New Yorkers, and the Alliance, since its inception pretty much, has tried to engage our homeless population in a constructive and dignified and persistent manner. We've worked for the last 16 years with the Bowery Residence Committee,
mm-hmm.
In partnership with Trinity Church, to reach out to those less fortunate in our neighborhood. You know, and you know, when you speak about people without homes, you're speaking about an array of different populations.
Absolutely, including families.
Families, single adults that have mental health challenges, single adults who've got substance abuse challenges, transient people who aren't really, you know, you might not see them week to week to week in the same place. They may move on.
Mm-hmm.
And your strategies for engaging those each of those individual populations changes. And that's why we're really heartened and proud to work with BRC, who's had decades and decades of experience in terms of outreach. You know, we had over, we had like very close to 7,500 direct contacts with homeless folks in our district
last year.
Mm-hmm. And I think most people understand that it is a painstaking, grudging task to transform people's lives and find them opportunities for the right kind of housing or the right kind of supportive housing.
Is there any of that in your district?
There are a couple supportive housing institutions.
But not much.
Not much.
Yeah.
Because it's a curious place in that, as I alluded to before, the preponderance of the new housing stock just came online in the last 20 years.
Right. And a lot of the old housing stock, like in the Bowery, because that you're part of the Bowery too, right?
No.
You're down further, right?
We're down below the Brooklyn Bridge.
That's the easiest way.
Right, you know, below City Hall Park.
Right.
So this is not, you know, while there were always, as I said before 9/11, kind of the residential population was 12,000-14,000 people, mm-hmm. And there was always a small residential population in Lower Manhattan. It was largely the province of businesses,
mm-hmm, sure,
in a financial center. So, one of the things that part of its growing pains and the excitement of building a new community is building in an array of social infrastructure and practical infrastructure, mm-hmm, that serves a residential community. And that's all coming online. We're not immune to the pressures of affordable housing and other challenges that, sure, the rest of New York faces. Mm-hmm. But again, it's an interesting place in that there is a new substantial population of residents who are defining their own needs right now. And it's hand in hand, both exciting and a challenge.
I was going to say, yeah, both of those things. This is Bill Ayers on New York's 95.5 PLJ. This is our Community Connection show. And we're talking tonight with Andy Breslau. He is the Senior Vice President of the Downtown Alliance. Their website is downtownny.com. downtownny.com. You can find out all kinds of information about the Alliance and the services that they have. And you can call them at 212-566-6700, 212-566-6700. We've covered a lot of bases so far, from Governor's Island through this new area that's developed as a residential area, several of them in downtown. Let's go over to the west side, to the South Street Seaport, because that's changed a lot. I used to go down there a good bit, and the last time I was down there, I couldn't recognize it. Talk to us about the changes that have happened there, because it is a destination, a tourist destination for lots of people.
For many years, South Street Seaport has had a grab on New Yorkers' imaginations, mm-hmm, and just this summer, kind of the new South Street Seaport has opened up with personally what I find to be a very exciting and smart sensibility about it. And the new Pier 17, the full complement of restaurants and stores is coming on this fall, but they've created this incredible public amenity in that they're great places just kind of hang out on the water, mm-hmm, and there will be wonderful restaurants in the pier in the early fall. But on the roof of the pier is a really enormous open air venue.
Oh.
That is.
I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, it's really on. You need to look. You need to check out their website to know when the roof is open to the public, but it is regularly open to the public just to hang out on the grass and look at all the East River bridges. But it's also a concert venue, which PLJ listeners should get themselves knowledgeable about, because you cannot, it is the way I've described it in the past, it is going to be New York's Red Rocks. You know, instead of the splendor of kind of canyons and geological formations, you're sitting out and you're literally looking up the East River right at the Brooklyn Bridge and the stage, you know, in front of that. And it's going to be just, you know, a capacity, I don't know the exact capacity, but it's a couple thousand at least.
Now, when does this open?
It's open. They've already had their their first couple shows. Kings of Leon, I think, was the first band that opened it up, and Amy Schumer did a stand-up routine. And so they have concerts all through the rest of this month.
So what's the name of the venue?
October. Excuse me?
What's the name of the venue?
If you look at Pier 17, look, you know, that, I think that's the easiest way to find out what's playing.
So, folks, there's a whole new world opening up down there that maybe you don't know about. I certainly didn't know about it, and I've been down there a lot, but not recently. And there are just all kinds of places that are really very interesting.
No, I just, you know, in the coming weeks, it's everything from Gladys Knight to Ziggy Marley to Deadmau5 to Sting. Diana Ross. I mean, they've got incredible shows booked for the venue.
Wow, yeah. Okay, so we got one more new venue in New York City to hear music, and this time in a very beautiful place. Now, is it outdoors, all outdoors?
It's an outdoor venue.
Oh, okay. So it's going to be good for a couple of months anyway.
Yes, I think that their plan is to have it be a spring through early fall venue, year in, year out.
Wow.
And then they're going to have programming on that roof. I know they have plans in the winter for an ice skating rink. It's going to be an incredible resource for all New Yorkers.
All right. So there's all kinds of things that you're learning tonight. If you've been listening to Andy Breslau, he knows what he's talking about because he is the senior vice president for the Downtown Alliance. And they're in charge of lots of different aspects of downtown. We've talked about a lot of the different things that are happening down there. We just talked about the South Street Seaport. There's a Statue of Liberty Museum. Where is that?
On Liberty Island.
It's on the island, right? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's coming early next year.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, one of the things
I was saying to myself, did I miss that?
You did not miss it.
Okay,
but it's very exciting because as inspiring as the statue is and the experience of getting out in a boat and going through the harbor to it is a fun one. And it's a kind of a bucket list attraction for millions of people around the world. They are producing a really robust museum that will tell the story of not only the history of the museum and its building, but kind of the social and cultural context in which it was erected and immigration. And it will be a very, for the first time, a kind of really rich way to spend your time beyond just walking around the inspiring statue. You'll be able to go in the museum.
It's history.
It's an important piece of history.
When is it going to be open?
In 2019. The exact date, TBD.
Okay, all right. So there's another thing to keep in mind, folks. Statue of Liberty Museum, obviously on the island, but not open yet, but going to be something that's... I want to go there. That's right up my alley. Lots and lots of history.
Bill, speaking of history, I mean, you know, this is where the Lenape people, Lower Manhattan is where the Lenape people settled
down
in Manhattan. Right. It's where the Dutch came in, and you know they're as seafaring mercantile people recognized the genius of the location of New York Harbor, and then it really is where one of the things I find exciting. It's where the Bill of Rights was established. It's where George Washington was sworn in as president. It's where
now, folks. Did you know that? See, I think a lot of people don't know that. People think maybe it was Philadelphia, maybe it was Washington. No, it was New York City.
Federal
Our first
Hall,
president.
Corner of Wall and Broad.
And still there.
still there, and his statue is stands to keep us all alert. And
as well, you know, we should.
Also, there's been a whole new species of tourism in Lower Manhattan, which is Hamilton tourism.
Yes, right.
Because Alexander Hamilton and Eliza Hamilton, Schuyler Hamilton, are both buried in the churchyard of Trinity Church.
Right.
And, you know, so much of Alexander Hamilton's formative labor in creating the American experiment happened in Lower Manhattan. It's, you know, where the New York Post was started. It's where by him, where Columbia College was started. It's where Francis Tavern is, which is where, you know, George Washington gave his farewell
to the troops. Yeah,
to the troops. Mm-hmm. It is the only place in the city where the colonial era of America comes to life quite so potently.
Mm-hmm. And there are still a number of buildings that were around then.
A handful, just a very few.
I know, yeah.
But more, you know, when you walk the graveyard in Trinity Church, it's really a beautiful place. It's a beautiful church. But you get, you know, the layers of New York history. Robert Fulton is buried there, and the steamship fame.
Sure.
And you know, I'm a big fan personally of Walt Whitman and the poetry of Whitman and the seaport and crossing Brooklyn Ferry and, you know, his odes to kind of the majesty of New York. You know, you can look around in Lower Manhattan and see Whitman's New York too. Mm-hmm. There's just a richness to the old and the new standing next to each other and being juxtaposed that you can't really find anyplace else. There's a Frank Gehry building next to, you know, direct, you know, line of sight from the Woolworth building, one of the most gorgeous skyscrapers in New York, and at one time the tallest building.
Yes, absolutely.
And next to that, down the street is Trinity Church, and you just get this fantastic richness of the layers of New York that are hard to find anyplace else.
So this is really a history tour here, as well as a geography tour that Andy Breslau is giving us of Lower Manhattan. And there's lots of places for you to visit, and you can find out about a lot of this on their website, downtownny.com. Let's go over now to the kind of tragic but still very beautiful 9/11 history and what's going on there, because there certainly has been a lot of work to create something new to replace what was destroyed.
You know, I like any of us who lived in New York on that day.
Yes,
it disrupted our sense of selves and place on a bunch of different levels. And one of the really heartening things at a elemental civic level for any of us is going back down to the World Trade Center site now and seeing a restoration of a place in a community. It's not the same, but you know, the streets that flow now, the buildings that are erected, the life on the plaza, on Memorial Plaza. When I talk to friends and family about the power of this new place, you know, not to get overly either political or sentimental, but one of the great ways that we as a city have overcome that awful day is that if you go down there now, you see people pushing strollers and you see people walking hand in hand through the plaza, and you see people taking somber note of what happened, but you also see people laughing and playing, and it's a place of life. You know, it's an active crossroads now. And that is really rewarding, I think, for almost anybody. It's a real success story. And what I said earlier about, the kind of corporate diversity and diversity in employment that's happening there, the World Trade Center is hugely emblematic of that.
Sure is. Yeah.
You know, Spotify is locating themselves at the World Trade Center.
I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's about the future, and not just and it feels that way, and it's not just some sort of it manages to be to hold on to its history and the appropriate gravity of that without being unduly somber, without being stuck in the past. And for those of your listeners who haven't had a chance yet to visit the 9/11 Museum, it's a profound experience.
Yes, it
not
is.
Always, it's not always easy. But I think for anybody New Yorker who wants to understand their city better, it's a must experience.
Okay, so that's just one more of the musts, and we've had a lot of them that we've heard from Andy tonight. Let's do a couple of tours with some museums, because you got some great ones down there, including Native American one, and then also the Irish Famine.
The Smithsonian's collection at the Museum of the American Indian is spectacular, and it's really wonderfully curated. It's a spectacular building.
It sure is.
And there are also these fantastic, in addition to the rich collection of Native American artifacts and art and the really smart programming they do out of that museum, there are these fantastic WPA era murals by Reginald Marsh that occupy a significant portion of the first floor that for those lovers of art history and painting are really a fantastic must-see.
Now, the WPA was one of President Roosevelt's programs during the 30s and 40s that put people to work, and especially artists.
And the kind of a very quintessential American painter, Reginald Marsh, was commissioned to paint these really large scenes of New York life on the harbor, and they're great. Besides the Museum of the American Indian, you've got the Jewish Heritage Museum, which is a rich and smart collection, and also has a great restaurant where you can get fantastic lox and bagels. And the Irish Hunger Memorial is more of an experience than a museum. It's an outdoor space that is made from rocks from all of Ireland's counties. And it's a beautiful place that looks out on the water, that gives you an opportunity to think about the you know, how disruptive and challenging it was for those people who fled to America to escape the dire conditions of the famine.
Yeah, I had an ancestor of mine who came here in 1850 as a 10-year-old boy. And I don't know whether he came by himself or with family or whatever. We haven't been able to trace that. But he had a remarkable life and, you know, came here with nothing and managed to have a very good life. And his son wound up being someone who was involved in New York City politics. And there are all of these stories that come from various ethnic groups, whether it's Irish or German or Jewish or whatever. All of these stories come from the melting pot right here.
Lower Manhattan was home to Little Syria.
Yes.
A population of Syrians who found their way to America and staked their claim to their version of the American dream a long time ago.
And it's true.
That is it's hard to be a cynic when you look at the experience of what New York has been.
Sure.
As you said, people from, you know, have staked their claim. And may they continue to do so.
I hope so. This is Bill Ayers on 95.5 PLJ, and this is our Community Connection show, which we do every week at this time. And our guest tonight is Andy Breslau. He is the Senior Vice President of the Downtown Alliance. Their website is downtownny.com. You can find out all kinds of information there, and it will help you to travel downtown and catch all of these amazing, amazing places and experiences. It's just loaded. And I certainly have learned a lot tonight that I didn't know before. I've been down there many, many times. But there's a transformation that's been happening. And the Downtown Alliance is responsible for some of that transformation and working hard to make sure that the whole area is clean, because they have a whole importance of cleanliness down there, and also safety, but also helping businesses and tourists and all kinds of people to have a good experience down there. So a couple more things we should talk about. I know you have a lot of museums down there, but now it's become a sort of a mecca for hotels as well. You have 32 hotels down there.
The growth in hotels is commensurate with the growth in tourism.
I guess so, yeah.
You know, there were, I think, 14.5 million visitors to Lower Manhattan last year.
Wow.
It's a draw from every place. I mean, you when we look at the data, when we do the kind of street intercepts to figure out who is visiting here, you know, every place from Turkmenistan to Bolivia, mm-hmm. you have visitors from.
Sure.
And it's amazing to walk the streets, like off many places in New York. And, you know, the beauty is you hear 6 or 7 different languages in the space of a block.
Mm-hmm.
But the attractiveness, particularly since the World Trade Center campus has been rebuilt, I mentioned the museum before, it's been a huge success. And you combine that with the Statue of Liberty and our collection of small museums and mm-hmm. mid-sized museums and Ellis Island and the whole other things that have drawn people for years here, the new attractions have driven Lower Manhattan as a place for people to base their stay in New York. And part of what we do is help the tourism institutions and stakeholders market the area, and it's very easy to do. Again, if any of your listeners want to have a cocktail in a spectacular place, there is no more spectacular place than the lobby of the Beekman Hotel.
That's an old one. That's a good
it's
one.
It's an old, but it's one of those things like only in New York. Mm-hmm. It was a building that was in mothballs for a long time.
Right.
Nobody knew that what you had was a 30-story building with a huge atrium, glass atrium, with wrought iron handrails on each, surrounding the atrium up. And you walk into this space, and you can't quite believe it. You don't know about it,
mm-hmm.
That's again, one of the exciting things about the layers of history in Lower Manhattan. If anybody is fortunate enough to, the event space Cipriani has opened up a new venue, relatively new venue, mm-hmm. down at 25 Broadway that was the old Cunard Ticketing Room. And it is, these huge mosaics of the Seven Seas and mm-hmm. seafaring, and it's like you're walking into a museum. You turn around in Lower Manhattan and you chew on a piece of New York history.
All right, you can do that, and because you can get down there pretty easily, several of the subway lines come in there.
I believe the number is 11 of the lines.
11 lines.
I might be off by one, but that's...
We'll take that. And several ferries and lots of buses, including their free bus, that if you want to go down there... And you don't want to walk all over the place. What does the bus look like, just so people
it's
can...
It's bright red and has the word free on it, so it's hard to miss.
You can't miss that one. Free and a red bus. Sounds good to me. And what have we missed? What have we not talked about?
Well, I think it's useful for people to know that we also run a huge free public Wi-Fi program.
Yes, tell us about
that. If you're walking around Lower Manhattan, we've got close to like 5 million square feet of Wi-Fi coverage. That, again, is free to anybody walking around in Lower Manhattan. I'd be remiss in if we didn't mention how important our small businesses are to us.
Mm-hmm.
We just launched a digital innovation grant program because one of the real challenges smaller businesses in New York have is competing with, you know, the Amazons of the world.
Sure.
And they need to grow their online presence and practice, both in it being more attractive and more useful to their bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
So we gave a $10,000 grant recently to a Martin Bush Jewelers, who've been in the neighborhood for more than 50 years, a woman-owned and run business on John Street, and we're helping them digitize their inventory. And that's, you know, we do that, and we also promote on a regular basis everything our small business partners do as much as we can.
I should mention that your office is 150 Broadway.
120.
Oh, 120. Okay.
120 Broadway.
Well, let's get that right. I don't know why I wrote down 150. 120 Broadway. And what's there? You have people can get Wi-Fi there as well, right?
Yeah, but you walk, if you walk down Broadway, mm-hmm. in Lower Manhattan from City Hall down to the Battery,
right.
You're going to be connected. You can be connected to our network and surf the web, use whatever mapping technology you want, or read up on history as you're walking down the street.
Mm-hmm.
We'll keep you plugged in to the net and elsewhere.
Now, one of the things that surprises me is that you have green markets down there. You have seven of them now, apparently, or maybe it's more. I don't know.
And one recently, what's been wonderful is the return of the green market to the World Trade Center site.
Ah, yes, right.
It was one of the cities, back in the day, it was one of the city's larger green markets. The market there now isn't quite as substantial as the market that existed in 2000, but mm-hmm. it's a meaningful presence, and it's a great market, and it's joined by, as you said, a number of others throughout the district. And that's been another kind of barometer of how much it's changed. There really was just like one place to buy food in Lower Manhattan. And
not anymore.
Not anymore. You've got, a variety of grocery options, and you've got Whole Foods coming to the corner of Wall and Broadway, and you've got Eataly, and you've got, every kind of price point and cuisine you can get your material, and now the bevy of green markets help augment that in a lovely way.
So we're getting to the end here. Have we missed anything? I don't see how we have, but maybe we did.
One thing I'd leave your listeners with, that's something that we're concerned about looking forward, mm-hmm. That all New Yorkers should be concerned about, which is resiliency.
Yes.
We live with water, and we're mm-hmm. very aware about the impact that an event like Sandy could have.
Devastating, yeah.
But the thing that people have to realize is that Sandy truly was a once in a generation, let's say, kind of a confluence of factors.
Mm-hmm.
The storm arrived at the height of high tide. It was
yep.
a full moon.
Yep, yep.
There were a bunch of other things. But the things that the first signs as New Yorkers that we'll see that resiliency is a challenge is more nuisance flooding.
Mm-hmm.
That the FDR will get flooded more, and that. Mm-hmm. Water won't drain away as fast, and you'll begin to see things like that. And as our organization really, we partnered really well with the mayor, this mayor, and previous mayors about resiliency issues. And Senator Schumer has been an indispensable partner in this stuff, but. There's a lot of work to be done, and we all need to keep our eye on the prize and work with our elected officials and work with community groups and stay focused on dealing with this new reality, because
it ain't going away.
It ain't going away, and we live on an island.
Yeah, we do. It's a great island, and this lower part of it is what Andy Breslau has been concerned about tonight. And we've learned an awful lot about it. I certainly have, and I hope you have too as you're listening. If you want to know more, you want to go to downtownny.com, and you'll find out lots of stuff there. I want to thank Andy Breslau for being with us tonight.